Hi, everyone. Welcome to All Things Creative, also known as Art Chats. I'm your host, Linda Riesenberg-Fissler, and I'm very excited to have my two guests on today, James and Leanne Van Fossen. And welcome, guys. I am like so excited to talk to you because you're just
Hi.
You guys are just so creative. It's I follow James. Leanne, you and I need to friend each other on Facebook, but I follow James, and I know a lot of what happens in your world because James is very supportive of you and you of James, naturally. So very, very sweet. Love that. And and so I do know a little bit about you and James, but what I also would like you to do is just tell us a little bit about each other, about you, each of you.
Okay.
Oh, I'll talk about me and she can talk about
me. Hey, that works for me, whichever works for you.
Now you go first.
You want me to go first?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I am an artist and an author, and I'm also an art teacher at a high school.
Oh, cool.
So it's kind of nonstop around the clock for me. And I've been painting, oil painting, since I was 12, and have had little breaks here and there, but I'm really fully into my art production, I would say, right now more than ever.
Oh, cool.
And we have a beautiful daughter, an 8-year-old. Her name's Sophia.
Okay, now that I didn't know about you.
She's not in the room with us, but she exists.
Okay, great. Well, congratulations on that, too. I mean, that was like a big surprise because I never see pictures out on Facebook. So maybe on your page, Leanne. Cause
she's the one that,
I'm more the...
I don't post more
than that. Okay. So go ahead, James. How about you?
Okay. From a creative standpoint, I was in the music when I was 13 is when I started playing. I've been drawing my whole life, but I started oil painting when I was 37 about. And I studied under Duffy Sheridan for a small amount of time, but that was enough to really inspire me to really go into full-time painting. And so I did it for 10 years, and now I've got a little side job just to help with the bills.
Okay, well, I understand that one too. So, all right, so I'm gonna jump in. The first thing I wanna do is show this next painting. And this was by James. And it's really interesting. I want you to tell us about this, but I also want to make mention that Roger Scruton, who I actually interviewed out at Track back, I think it was like, 2014 maybe. And I know that he actually commented on this painting, and that's amazing. I mean, Roger is Roger is a very sweet guy. I mean, he actually came on live when I was out there podcasting from Track. And the reason why, you know, at that time, the Track conference was about why beauty matters. So to have someone of Roger's stature make a comment on a painting, I bet you were like walking on air.
Gosh, I couldn't believe it. I mean, I love listening to him talk. I tell Leanne, I wish I was that smart all the time. I'm not even close, but I think I agree with so much what he says. So, and we actually invited him to the opening for this painting in Manhattan, and he responded back with the words, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm just glad he responded, and then he said had such nice words to say about the painting.
Right. So you have to share what he said, because now people are sitting there going.
I'm trying to remember exactly what it was, because I can look at it. Can I look at the email?
Sure. Yeah, right, you won't disturb what's up. So
because I have it up on my emails all the time. Like, senior, I'm in conversation with Roger Scruton all the time. Okay, here's what he said. Dear Mr. Van Fossen, thank you for the email, for your very kind remarks, and for the interesting image of your incredibly ambitious painting. Alas, I won't be able to make your show, but I wish you all the best with it, since it certainly deserves critical praise. Well done.
Yeah.
So that sent me to the moon. So.
Cool. Yeah. Well, and you can always tell he's British because alas, you know, we don't walk.
Alas.
Around. Yeah. We don't walk around in America going alas.
So smart people.
So what inspired you to do this painting?
I guess most of all, the visual inspiration was Michelangelo. I wanted to push myself to see how far I can take the figure. And I'd only done one multi-figure painting before this, and it was very successful. And so I wanted to push myself and see how many figures I can fit together in an 8.5 by 6.5 foot painting and make it readable, make it clear. The narrative, yeah, I wanted to hopefully if people spend time looking at it, they would figure out some kind of narrative with it. And I know it's very confusing and challenging to a lot of people, but it was to me too. And I think it was a success after 3 years of painting it.
Yeah. Wow, 3 years.
Full time.
Wow.
And again, it was kind of with my contemporaries, it was kind of looked at, some loved it, maybe some didn't. I didn't hear much about it, but it was shared on a big Facebook site that had like 4 or 6 million followers, and I started getting all these comments and friend requests. And I read there was like 3 or 4 thousand comments on the painting, and they were all just so positive and cool. And that's just regular people looking at it and commenting. That's kind of what I liked, just
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I mean, 3 years worth of effort to be rewarded with that is, well deserved. So,
Thank you.
I'm looking around the picture. Leanne, are you in here? Is that you in the
Well, yeah,
blue?
I'm in the blue,
That's
and
right.
that's our little girl when she was, gosh, I guess 5 years ago, that I'm holding on to. And then, he was very Da Vinci-esque. He would cut off certain people's heads and put other people's heads on for the aesthetic goal. So I'm in different places throughout. And we did have some friends model, and James himself modeled for a lot of the male
Yeah, about
figures.
90% of the male. Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's pretty cool. I like that. So now I have to do you I'm like stumbling over my words here because I have like four questions in my head. But do you want to talk a little bit about your process, James, or do how about we go on to one of Leanne's paintings, let her talk a little bit about that, and then
Yeah, whatever you want.
yeah, let's do that, and then you both can kind of chime in about maybe how your painting processes are the same or and how they different because your styles will change.
I don't know if there's any
There's
similarities.
not.
Yeah, I was like, the paintings are so different. I mean, I would put James more in a classical realism mode based on that first painting, and Leanne, you are all about wonderfully strong shapes and color. So, impressionistic. I would put you in that mode, which is cool because that's what I am. I put myself in that
Oh,
mode as
cool.
well. So, yeah. So tell us, how you came being an art teacher. First of all,
Yes.
you really are going to always push your boundaries because you have to push your students' boundaries. And
Right.
yeah, so this is, I mean, I love the simplicity of this, and yet it is so strong. So,
Thank you. And this is actually a miniature painting. It's, I think, only 6 inches. But I had a lot of fun with it. I have done a huge series of harbor and boat scenes. I'm born and raised in the mountains in Colorado, and there I continue to live, but I guess my soul lives in the sea. Because that's what I love to paint. But yeah, I am a very fast painter, I guess, especially compared to James. He just finished talking about how he spent 3 years on that painting, and I've never spent 3 days on a
That's
painting.
true.
I have kind of a short attention span, and I have a daughter and other things. So when I commit to a painting, I kind of commit that session to finishing the painting as well as starting it.
And I love that.
It's a goal for you, sounds like, James. I'm going to finish a painting.
Trying to work up to
And you said it right. You're an impressionist, so I'm obsessed with light and color. So
that.
that's really where my my heart goes in every piece.
Someone said it's harder to write a poem than a novel sometimes, because you have to condense the right things down, you know, before you even start. And I think that's why I like her paintings. They're like poems. Mine are more like
epic novels.
Trilogies or something. Yeah. But yeah, this is really great. But so is this a brush or palette knife, both?
Oh, good question. I do use a lot of palette knife. I always start my paintings with brush. I like to brush on the foundations and kind of outline the vision with brush, but I tend to conclude with the palette for added texture and definition and just some final touches of light and color. So
yeah, that's wonderful. And James, mostly brush?
Yeah, I start with vine charcoal and hit it right with the brush right away and stick there. I mean, I've experimented with palette knife, but I'm trying to stay focused with the brush.
And you know, there's nothing wrong with either one, which is what I tell. Yeah. I teach in an art center as well, and they watch me paint with palette knife, and they're constantly. I have a lot of beginners in my class, so as Leanne just posed, you know, talked about, you have to start with your basic foundations. You have to learn, you know, some before you break all the rules. You got to learn the rules, you know. So
the two,
You know, so it's really kind of interesting because, and the other part, which we can get into a little bit of a conversation too about imagination, but it was really kind of interesting because it's like I have this painting in my mind. It's like, great, I can't help you.
Exactly.
But I can help you get the foundations, and I can help you build the skills, and keep that painting in your mind, because you aren't going to get there now. So,
like, everybody wants to say something, but they have to learn the language to communicate it first, and then they can speak their soul with it or their vision. Yeah,
absolutely. So, anything else that you want to that you can think about that you want to talk about your process of painting?
We're very different. James is very methodical and has, you know, a lot of thought and sleepless nights put into his paintings, whereas I'm extremely impulsive. I do not plan at all, and I rarely even sketch out the paintings before I go. That just shows how different we are, which is hilarious, but it works for us in our respective ways.
So, I wish I was impulsive.
Well, that, you know, that's, I don't think that's unusual for someone who is more classical realism. I mean, there's always been a struggle when you paint in a classical form to you know, break those rules that are so there. And that's one, and to tell you the truth, that's one of the reasons why I went from brush to palette knife, because I couldn't break it when I had a brush in my hand.
Exactly. That is a perfect example.
And I actually did a series of portraits with palette knives. I think the Art Renewal Center has a video up of me painting with a palette knife.
Which is funny. Did it for about a month of his entire career and then never did it again.
But it did it broke through the something. I was like dreaming of painting with a palette knife, and I actually did it. But now, it helped.
And it's really interesting too, is because there's this thing of fear behind it. It's like, at least I see it in my students. I have one student who did a lot of pastel work, so her drawing skills are wonderful. And you know, she kept saying to me, I want to get looser. And then I'd watch her paint, and she'd be sitting there with a brush like a pastel and combining, you know, or as we call it in the class, mushing all these colors together so there wasn't a hard edge. And, you know, I'm going, okay, you know, let me talk to you about edges, Joanne, you know, or Joan, do this, you know. And she just kind of looks at me strangely. And then finally I looked at her and I said, okay, I want you to paint a painting and palette knife. I said, you could put the value pattern, the value study on first, but when that value study is done, you're putting color on with palette knife. And she did it, and she broke through, and she sat there and looked at me like, why have I been beating my head against the wall? And now she's like, I'm painting the value study with a palette knife. And I'm like, no.
No. hold on.
It's like, you're going to have globs of paint everywhere. No, don't do that.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is, I really do think there is this, there's something that holds you back. And I don't know, I always attribute it to some kind of fear or something. It's like, if when, as long as you have this, I know how to paint with a brush. If I pick something else up, I don't know how to paint with that. So, but
it, and, yeah, and a good way of breaking it is to really realize you could paint with a rock if you really just anything that picks up the paint and puts it on, you know, the canvas. If you might have to, you know, use different thoughts doing it, but you can really paint with anything, a basketball, a rock, a toothbrush, anything.
Do you
know? Yeah, it's really, it's funny. My students, you know, if they're beginners to advanced, they still all have these expectations of perfection in their heads, whereas they're scared to draw a line, paint a line, because it may not be perfect. And and I'm like, that is so against the nature of what we're doing. We need, you have to expect it not to be perfect.
Yeah, it's always never perfect.
And you have to, it's more about how it feels and what you learn through application of technique.
Yeah,
and
adjusting. After it's on there, you just start adjusting.
Yeah. It's, and the other thing that I find, and I don't know if you see it or even if you have some, you probably did when you first started. I doubt you do now, but it's one of these things where it's, the painting is too precious. I don't want to ruin. Oh, I like that brushstroke I put down. I'm never going to touch it again.
That's exactly right.
No, we
exactly
still have, we still have that. I would say I still, well, my paintings go so quickly, but I get attached to certain parts.
Yeah, that is, and I remember that so much when I was first starting, And that's why, like Duffy Sheridan said, you like paint, you know, 10 paintings and then goes and then wipe them off and start again. And when you're new, you're like, no, I'm wiping off my heart. But it's the only way to really, to break through is to get over that.
Yeah. It's really kind of funny because, Leon, you probably deal with this when you're teaching as well. But it's really funny because I'll put my value study on and my students will be standing there and they'll go, oh, I love that, because I paint with them so that they can watch me. And then, you know, I take breaks and go and talk to them. It's a 2-hour class. So it's, you know, So they're there to paint just as much as I'm there to teach. But if I do a constant teach for 2 hours, then they never get any application, you know, in doing it. So I do it individually and then in between. So I'm not standing over their shoulder and they feel like I'm staring at them. I end up painting a little bit, which then they can watch me, you know, if they have some questions that they can't formulate. So it's really kind of interesting because I'll put my value study on so that they watch me do that. And then while I'm putting on color, I'll go, oh, you know, I really don't like that. And I'll just like scrape it off. And in the end is nothing like the value study. And they'll sit there and go, why did you do that? And I'm like,
it's just a process.
And I sat there and I go, why does this look worse? And they're like, no, but I like the other one too. Why didn't you just paint it again? And I'm like, oh, I'm not into painting it again. You know?
No, me either.
Yeah.
Sorry, not like Monet where I do 150 haystacks. That ain't me. One haystack, that's all there is.
There's a whole world out there.
That's right. So, but yeah, I don't know. Do you see any of that in your students as well? It's just kind of like the
I just am trying to get them to break through the mentality of having to be perfect. And I don't know if it's their age, you know, I work with mainly 16 to 18 year olds. When I teach workshops with adults, there will be some of that reservation at the beginning, the fear of the palette knife, the awe in which I eliminate and add and eliminate and add. But then the adults I find are a little bit more willing to be courageous with the process. It's interesting.
It is. I'm trying to think of like some other instances where some other stuff has come up, but I do have one student, James, and you'll probably identify with them. He was talking with someone who studied under Daniel Graves, and I'm sure you know who Daniel Graves is, Florence Atelier. And anyway, so Florence Academy, I think it is. But anyway, this gentleman was in Dayton, where one of my students live, and he went to talk with him and all this. So he comes into my class and he looks at me and he says, I think I'm going to Florence. And I went, good for you. What are you going to do there? You know, I'm thinking vacation, right? He's like, no, I think I'm going to go study with Daniel Graves. And I'm like, do you know Daniel Graves? He's like, no. And I'm like, do you mean at his academy? And he goes, yeah. And I said, oh, okay. So that kind of cleared that one up. But it was really kind of interesting because he's like, you know, I want to go study in an atelier, but I don't want to paint in classical realism. And I just kind of look at him and go, but I don't think you should go to that academy.
Right. Because they would feel that in you.
Right.
Yeah.
So did he go?
No. No, he didn't. He's actually down in Florida right now, but it's really just kind of interesting. He's still thinking about going there. So it's a really interesting conversation because I met Daniel Graves at track and had a couple conversations with him. Wonderful man and would be lovely to study under. But as I told him, I said, you have to be willing to like draw hands for 5 weeks.
Well, that's true. It's funny because I lived and studied in Florence my junior year of college. I lived there for a year and so was surrounded by, you know, the Renaissance and the Uffizi and all of the best of the best and traveled to Paris and went to the Louvre. And it had to have resonated somewhere in my practice, even though I'm a contemporary impressionist. But maybe those subtle attentions to light and just compositions and color, use of color, somewhere subconsciously had to sink in with me, even though my style is so completely different.
Yeah. But I think that's, I mean, I keep wondering in a closet somewhere if maybe James doesn't have a couple attempts at impressionism. And then, Leanne, conversely to you, you have these, you know, hidden in the closet classical realism paintings that we'll never see or something.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you do from high school.
Well, James, though, you're spot on with James, and he's out of the closet with his series. He's actually, tell her about your series.
Well, that's not me. That's Leanne's. But I'm doing paintings is based on decorating. I've been working with decorators and what people just love to hang on their walls, because you know so many times you put so much hours in a painting and people don't even want to hang it on their wall, and so. But my point is, I wasn't going to talk about Joppa, but he's like my, what is he, alter ego. And I'd put a cigarette in my mouth and paint like Pollock. I just start throwing paint on and moving around.
And they sell.
They're selling. They sell. And it's, oh no, secrets out.
No, but it's a release. It's like this mental, emotional release, you know, from the tight rigidity. Right.
Yeah, oh, it's so fun. I finish them faster than Leanne finishes hers.
Oh.
And they're huge.
Is that a challenge?
Yeah, it's a challenge. But anyway, it's fun. And I don't know. That's all I got to say about it.
So
he didn't want to tell anyone. But it's going to come out because he's doing more and more. And they're just fun abstract expressionist pieces. And they're big and bold and just fun.
So art does have to go with the couch? Is that the new saying now?
Oh, gosh, we hate that. No. I mean, integrity-wise, no.
Well, we've gone over and over on this. You know, a painting can be so much more than just decoration. And then you look at the last, that's been an argument for so long.
It has.
Is it decoration or is it?
It's up to the person buying it, you know? What is their purpose? What is their connection with the painting? Is it because it complements their interior design? And that's fine. If it's aesthetically beautiful in that way, you know, that's fine. And then, but it, or do they collect art because they connect with the art piece itself aside from everything else?
Or you can come to my house where I have early marriage furniture. I have like, nothing matches anything, so it doesn't matter. what's on your wall.
It doesn't matter what's on your wall.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yep. So it's comfortable. I love it. It's me. So.
That's good. Yeah. Comfort is good.
All right. So I'm gonna go on to some other stuff. You guys are cracking me up. I love this. So
what?
You both have, no, it's just the way you banter with each other. And I mean, there's some competition there. I can kind of hear it, but there's not. I mean, it's not in a bad way. It's fun competition. Yeah. You can laugh at one another. I that's what's cracking me up. It's like, okay. Because I've seen it way on the other side where it's not like that too. So.
Oh, I know. We've talked to a few artists like that too. And I hate that.
Yeah.
Gosh. We're so not competitive. I mean, in only the fun way that you've heard, we're too different. You know, what's there to compete about? We're so different.
Yeah. And like, I can tell just the Facebook posts, you are so supportive of each other. And I really, really appreciate those posts when they come up. It's really nice. So,
I mean, she started it with me. I mean, she sold my artwork in a gallery before she met me, so she was supporting me before she knew me.
Yeah, that's how we met. I sold his art. Yeah,
cool. So was that in Colorado? Is that where you live
it
now?
It was actually in Scottsdale. I had moved down there after college, and you know, my degree was in art, and I had lived in Italy, and I didn't really know what to do, so I started working in art galleries, and that's where it all happened. I started selling his art before I even knew him.
Oh, cool.
Great. And she did it for a long time. And then after how many years we were together, I finally convinced her to start painting again. And I was blown away how her ability to paint in this style, like you're looking at. Mm-hmm. And I just started supporting her. It became more important, you know, even than my art at that time.
No.
Well, after I finished that big painting, I was going to support anything but me. I was so done with me and painting. I mean, you can get too much into your own head and in your own career and your own painting, your own style. It's actually not that good for you. So,
yeah, cool. So that like takes right into our other projects that you guys do. You both paint, but you both kind of like diverge the painting part, because James, I think you have music projects that are going on that I want you to tell us about. And Leanne, you just published a book, which I'm a writer also. So we'll talk a little bit about that. So, but first, James, tell us about what's this music thing you got going on?
What is that?
Well, the music thing, it first started, I was making, every time I would do a major painting, the first 8 years of my art painting career, I would write a song to go with the painting and make a music video where I would show the painting and show maybe me working on it and play the song that goes with the painting. And I did a lot of videos like that, and it was kind of fun. But I started, we live in Eagle, Colorado, and there's a lot of bluegrass and folk music around. So right now I'm in a trio, and I play mandolin or harmonica. And we have a great singer and another guy sings. Well, we have a female singer and a guy who plays acoustic guitar. But we're really doing good around here. We have a radio interview.
Yeah, they're amazing. Yeah. They sound amazing.
And so that's what I'm excited about musically right now.
Cool. And Leanne, you are – no, I didn't mean to make that sound that badly. Guys, I heard you chuckle after I said cool. But
we're chuckling because he exhaled for the first time in like 7 minutes.
I'm such a bad talker. She always looks at me. She gets so nervous and looks at me when I'm talking because she doesn't have faith in my talking. She has more faith than I do in my ability to speak orally, but I get through it.
You're doing great. Hang in there, James.
Hang in there, James. We're here for you.
Yeah. So, but now I have a friend. It was really kind of interesting. He played backup guitar for Manhattan Transfer, and I got in contact with. Yeah, his name's Wayne Johnson. Really, really cool guy. But I contacted him when I was working with Kevin McPherson. Kevin had 365 paintings a day. a pond outside his home for each day of the year. And we were putting together an exhibit for this, and I contacted Wayne and said, hey, you want to put some music together to that? And he did. It was pretty cool. And I'll send you some of the, I don't think it's been released. So,
I'd love to see that.
I'll send you something on the side. So, Wayne, if you're listening, don't turn your ears off.
We will not reproduce ourselves.
Well, he's got the copyrights on it, I'm sure. So, but yeah, I'll see if I can find them on my computer.
Yeah,
but
that'd be cool. I love that whole idea.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. And then I had him on the show, and he talked about, you know, what the painting invoked in him and why he used such, I'll send you the link to that too, because it'd probably be fun for you to listen to Wayne talk about that. Yeah. So that it was really, when you said that you were doing that with your painting, putting music with your painting, my mind went immediately to Wayne doing this for me. And it was just like, it's really interesting the way that music and art almost go hand in hand. Whereas, whereas Leanne, writing and art just does not go hand in hand at all. I mean, it's almost feels like it's two different sides of your brain working in some.
It is. Yeah. I mean, now that I've gotten through, survived the novel thing, painting feels very easy and fun and effortless to me.
But it is, I mean, in some ways it is the same. You still come back to, and I can talk about this with you because I've written four novels and I'm on my fifth. Don't make it sound like it's so bad.
I'm still recovering.
She's on her second one right now.
I'm almost done with my second one, but oh man, Linda, I'm struggling.
let's talk about the process a little bit. Maybe we can help. So maybe I can
talk me through this. No. I never had any ambitions to be a writer ever. I've always been well read. I've always loved reading. Our daughter is an incredible reader too. There's something in the bloodline, but
not mine.
But I just I love reading, and I have some of my favorite authors, and James, I've told stories to our daughter, and I get really elaborate and storytelling.
We have a little game we play where
we take turns
and say, okay, tell a story. You got, however long it takes, just start telling a story. And it's great for your mind.
Yeah. It's a challenge and it's fun. And so James started telling me, you got to write a book because of my award-winning stories within our family.
Won that little game. Yeah.
And, so we were sitting on Nantucket. We were in Nantucket because of Nancy Thayer, one of my favorite authors, writes all these books about Nantucket. And she made it so romantic and wonderful to me that we spent thousands of dollars to go to Nantucket and vacation there. So that just shows the impact of a good book, good writer. Yeah, exactly. But we were sitting there in front of our little rose-covered cottage, and I got the idea for my book, I didn't hold myself to any standard or expectation. It was nothing I had ever done before, and I had no deadlines. Mm-hmm. So I just really pursued it for me and for the story I had in my head.
So there's the book.
There's the book, Painting Blue Water.
It wasn't the naked guy. That wasn't the cover.
Yeah, I thought since you were getting more into the book, I thought I better go to the book before she wrote about Atlas or something. So
No, I'm not that deep.
She's not like a man at all.
So I'm assuming, is this a photograph that's the cover that you used?
Yep, that's one of my original photographs.
Great.
And it's a place that I will not disclose because I love it.
Yeah, very good.
I'm selfish and I don't want to share it. But some people know where it is. You know, if you've been there, you know where it is. Yeah. It served as the setting, the main setting. It also takes place in Manhattan, a place I've spent a lot of time in as well and have always loved. And there is a lot of art in this book. I mean, it's a fiction and it's women's fiction, but the protagonist is an artist. So there is a lot of art reflection in the book.
Oh, cool. So, women's fiction, is it more mystery? Is there a little bit about the plot?
No mystery, some romance, some romantic comedy. I like to say, Kate Hudson movies, that's kind of the vein of the book. Or I like light, positive reads that have a little bit of the drama in them.
But more escape.
I like to escape. That's a good word for it. I want, and that's what a lot of the reviewers said about it, is that you could just escape right into it, which was really fulfilling.
Well, so far we already covered 2 points in the process that of writing, and one was never write about anything you haven't experienced and or haven't been. So don't write about somewhere where you haven't been, which I already broke that rule with about three of my novels.
Well,
Well,
that's
I think
again
you're
with the
good.
breaking the rules. It's like you have to, and also if you make up a fictional place, who's to say what's right or wrong about it?
And that's my fantasy novel. That is, I'm starting to get back to work on that. And that is, just trying to make up names is names of places and names of characters. It's like, okay, let's just throw some alphabets in the air and see, to look. But yeah, so that was kind of it's the mystery espionage political intrigue novel that I have 4 novels out there on, is basically it's a series. And that one is kind of, I love the characters. I will never leave the characters. I'll probably always be writing on this series until, they're 92 and dead or something. But it's also, the fantasy writing is now a challenge because I am creating. What got me back into my writing was I started reading the original books of J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings.
Oh yeah.
Okay, not the books that came out when the movies came out. I'm talking about the original small little books. There's 7 of them, full of poetry and everything. And I sat there and thought, wow, the way that he created this world and the way that he
So
did it.
free.
And I just kind of sat back and went, okay, you're an artist. You should be able to create a world. Let's go do it. So yeah, that's been more challenging than I thought. So it's not
Well,
quite that
that's
simple.
exciting though, because I've even talked about, oh, it would be so fun to write a post-apocalyptic, something, because you can completely decide what everything looks like and
That's my big painting. That's basically what I did with my big painting. It was my world, and nothing was wrong. I could do whatever I wanted in it, make whatever I wanted to.
So if we look at the painting process, and we start off with the value study, then we throw some color on it, then we do some rearranging, so we've got 3 basic points that we all go through, creating a foundation, creating the middle section of the painting, and then creating the end of it. Writing a book, Leanne, isn't that much different. Okay, you got your plot points and you got your climax, and then you've got your midpoint where you throw in another maybe little plot twist,
I was very beginning to end. I know some authors jump around. They know the ending first and then they build up to it, or they write out like an outline, which I do a little bit, but I really just knew where I wanted to start and then I started. And then I built from there. And then the farther I got into it, the more I could see where it was going to go. But just like a painting, you lay down those layers and you build on the layers.
So let's jump back to music, James. It's kind of the same as music, right? So you have a beginning piece, you have the middle section, a bridge.
Well, like if you're writing a song, you know, then you need more of the outline. But what her book was like, almost like a solo, she just started with it and started, you know, reading what she was writing and building on it and then putting an end to it without thinking about it too much.
But with music.
Well, if with music, I would probably say you come up with a nice little riff and go, oh, what can I do with this, right?
Yeah, as a solo, it's like jazz. When you're doing a solo, it's just you can do whatever you want. If you make a mistake, instead of trying, you can't go back and fix it. You just try to build on the mistake in a way that it's not a mistake.
Right.
And so I think she was unique in writing this book in that way. She didn't follow the rules usually that authors use. And I think a good song is usually written that way too. There's not much thought involved. It just comes out. It's like it almost dictates itself where it's supposed to go.
Sorry about that. I was
sorry.
I was trying to get to another picture. So sorry. <No. laughs> It's like all of a sudden it just decided that was the end. We're gonna, you know, but it's not. Hang on. But yeah, so it is. I think from time to time, and like you said, sometimes you just have to get your head out of the way and just let creation happen. But if you start to really compare processes between, or processes, however you want to pronounce it, between all of the different arts that are out there, there is this common foundation that kind of goes through it. I mean, we can't just, if we all could just pull things out of our imagination without some kind of skill and without some kind of foundation, you know, I don't know what everything would look like, but I don't even know if that would be possible unless you're telepathic, because
I talk with George Gallo a lot about that because he's a musician too, and he paints very and a painter. You know of George Gallo?
Good friend. Okay.
That's probably why we're connected.
Yeah, that's probably why we're connected on Facebook. But it's funny there. You in movie making, he talks about, you know, his movies and as like a painting, and then I'm more into music, so I talk the paintings more into music. But he's a musician too. Mm-hmm. But there's great in very deep ties to all that. And it's better. Well, the one cool thing about it is to understand your medium, to know what. Try not to make a movie with your painting, which is exactly what I did with the big one. But know what can a painting do? What can a song do? And know your limits to that, and then work within those limits instead of that way. You won't frustrate yourself if you know all those mediums.
Yeah,
I'm not sure how important that is to everyone.
No, I think it is. I mean, to build on that, I had a conversation with George on the phone when he was in Savannah and filming the current movie that he's working on, The Poison Rose.
Right.
And it was interesting because I said, well, so how's it going? And he's like, oh, you know, it's going really well. And he was on talking about it. And he says, you know, he goes, now that I'm talking to you, and you always ask me about process, which I do. And he comes back and he says, now I'm thinking about it, this is like painting a painting. But he just goes into, you know, I got like he had some time because they were on location, thank God. But he was just kind of talking about, you know, for like the next 15 minutes, so where he was in this painting that he was making. And it was really an interesting conversation. Of course, probably just interesting to all of us who are creative types. Everybody else is probably falling asleep at this point. But it was, you know, but it was really interesting to hear him compare where he was in the process without giving a lot away, because, you know, he wasn't at the liberty to do that, but he just, you know, just I'm at this point in the painting where, you know, all the colors have come in and they've kind of shot their own little, you know, and now I'm going to have to take all of this when I get back and make this wonderful painting out of it, you know,
And I think that's why he loves painting so much, because when he's making a movie, there's all these other people holding his brush, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. So it really is kind of interesting talking to him when he has his different hats on, you know, and again, when he picks up that guitar, it's zone out time. I mean, he's just, and it's really, really wonderful. Such a creative person.
I know. He's such an inspiration creatively.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
And he's oot.
Yeah. Plus, he doesn't take himself seriously, which I love about him. First thing he does is bust me, then I bust him, and then.
He's yeah, it's been a lot of fun working with him and talking with him. I had a couple art chats with him on here, and they're one of the most popular ones because he is so funny to talk to, and you know, and so much fun. And I'd ask him a really serious question, and he'd just sit there and go, "Where did that come from?" And then all the art chat is like, "Okay, I didn't have editing software then; I couldn't edit it out." So thanks, George.
Oh, boy. That's a risk with George.
But I mean, it was funny. You know, we laugh a lot. Like I'm sure you guys do too.
Funny. Yeah.
So I wanted to talk. We only got about 10 more minutes. You guys have been wonderful to talk with, but I
go on.
Yeah. One of the things that I wanted to talk about though, is because you got two really creative people living together with a child. Leanne, you mentioned you teach and teach art, I'm assuming. I think you said art teacher. Yeah. And James is working a little bit on the side too, and he has his music and all this. So when you guys like walk into whatever room is your studio in the house, your creative area in the house, what do? Hang up a do not disturb sign? I mean,
well, that's a funny question because we live in this gorgeous loft condo with tons of natural light and high ceilings. We just lucked out. So when you say the space that we created, you're speaking to our living room and dining room and kitchen. I'm not even kidding. It's the best light in the house. It's hard floors. It's wide open. Mm. So there is no privacy.
No. And I used the first 8 years of my painting career, I painted like Duffy. Well, he painted in the living room too, but I had a little space provided with the perfect light and I did everything exactly right. But then I painted Drama Magnifico that way. But after that, I was like,
he was starting to feel really isolated. Yeah. And we actually love being all up in each other's business while we're painting, exactly. You know, and, or when so I'll be working on a painting. Sophia will be, you know, building something in the corner and James will be writing a song and I'll be asking him, you know, does this look, what do you think about this color? Or should I put this tree here? Should I put this happy little tree here or should I not? You know, and
I wait for you to ask. But,
so I'm always so open and I ask him, you know, do you like this? What do you think? Do you like this? And then, but when he's painting, I think he wants the same kind of attention. And so I'll go up and say, you're going to fix her eye, right? And he'll look at me like, I'm not there yet. I'm not ready yet.
But I tell you, when I'm ready to get her opinion, I need it really bad because she offers invaluable opinions on my art now. I couldn't finish a painting without her, actually.
Yeah. So now I've learned, you know, 10 years in the marriage. So I'll creep up and go, how's it going? And I'll say, and he'll say, I'm almost ready to ask you what you think.
Go away for 5 more minutes.
I just want you to enjoy it right now.
No, it's fun. It's like wide open living working space.
Yeah, it's good. It's like our own little artist colony here.
Nah.
Yeah, that it does sound like that. You were talking about my students are really funny when they're painting and stuff because they'll hear me put down my palette knife and they're like, and you just see it. It's all of a sudden they start getting tense. It's like, oh no, here she comes. She's going to come over and talk to me. I know she's going to come over and talk to me. And it's like, I'm not that mean. I mean, that's what I keep saying. I said, you guys, am I saying things wrong? I mean, because, you know, I can be pretty direct. And I'm like, am I saying things wrong? Because I don't want to discourage you. I want to have a conversation with you, you know, and we want to be positive and, you know, and all this. And then it was just like, one time we were sitting there and I said, okay, I would walk up and I just circle my, like an area on the thing. I said, you need to fix this. And that's all I say is you need to fix this. And they look, and I'm waiting for them to ask me questions, you know, because like, I told you there's something wrong. I want you to ask me questions. They start asking me questions, but it was really funny because they've all now known each other for, some of my regular students have known each other for a good year or whatever. And the next thing I know is, hey, do you see the guy winking at me up there? And then I'm like, oh my God, here we go. And it's like, it just went and just, and it was all done and they were laughing and having fun with it. And the person didn't get upset about it. And I was just like, wait a minute. No, don't get that way. Because I'm worried about people just being way too negative and hurting somebody's feelings. And then they go away, you know, but it was funny because it was like, and then they came over and I was like, okay, yeah, I see the person in mine, you know, that eye that's sticking up there in the middle of the tree, I'll get rid of it.
Yeah. It's the whole thing. Teachers, I mean, I've taught a little too. Do you border on, do you be the one who's pulling the weeds or do you encourage the grass to grow, you know?
Yeah.
Or is it hard?
It's a combination. It's funny, at the beginning of the year, my students, they go, am I done? Can I be done? Can I be done? And I hate that question. Yeah. And so inevitably, always, without fail, I will say, well, no, because you can fix this, this, and this. And so that now I have this reputation. Miss Van is never satisfied. You can never be good enough for her. But what it does is it pushes them to try to answer all those things before they know I'm going to find them. And so now they know I've seasoned them. They come up to me and say, what else can I do?
Well, there you go.
Not can I be done? Yeah.
They ask me that and I come back, go, I don't know. Are you done?
Yeah.
And they just look at me and go, oh, stop it. And I'm like, no, are you done? Stand back here. Go. Our favorite saying is, we live down towards Cincinnati in Ohio, and Cleveland is way up on the other side of the northern side of the state. Okay, so about 4.5 hours away from Cincinnati.
Right.
So I would then whenever you go, am I done? Go stand in Cleveland and tell me what you see.
Yeah.
And then you can tell me if it's done, because they never walk away from their canvas. It's a constant
right
up against, you know, it's so like important. Go stand in Cleveland and tell me. So they go all the way to the back of the room and they stand there and look at it. And I go, what do you see? And they go, well, my eye went right to uh-huh. Go fix it.
So, yeah.
You know.
And also, I don't know if this is good. This is like catering to technology, but what James and I have found out is when we think we're done and we go to photograph the piece for our websites, it's amazing what you spot in the photograph.
Oh, yeah.
And you go, oh, gosh, how could I not see that right in front of me?
And especially knowing 90% of the viewers of the painting will see it as a little thumbnail on their screen.
Yeah, exactly. So it really helps to snap a picture of it and see if anything jumps out at you.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that helps more than I was always taught, you know, turn it upside down, turn it on its side. But all I do is, as I try to stand on my head and look at it or turn my head to the side and look at it, it doesn't help as much as if I do take a picture of it. And I think that comes from our, you know, my work life in Procter & Gamble, I was on a computer all day. So I'm used to catching mistakes on a computer screen. I'm not used to catching.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. And one of the technique stuff we taught as a portrait painter, which a lot of people teach, is you look at, well, as you work and you look at the mirror and it flips it and you get a new approach to it. I did that one of my first, you know, 5 or 6 years. For some reason, I stopped doing it only because of this process of taking it. It's so easy now to snap a picture and look at that, you know, that'll wash your mind of, you know, how you're used to seeing it too.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that I do is I'll take a picture of the color. Like I'll have my husband actually is the photographer. So he'll take a picture of the painting when I'm done and then send it over to me. And then I'll take that and turn it back into a black and white so that I can compare my original value study to where I ended up with my colors. And see how strong it is. So it's another real helpful tip if folks are looking for it.
I mean, all other mediums are that way. Songwriter, it's not done when they're done. They let someone hear it, you know, then they hear it back, and then in a week it'll change. And you should don't be done with it until you start messing it up, and then, you know.
Yeah, how many times have we heard, oh, I shouldn't have done that?
I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, that's when you're done.
Well, right after you fix what you just did.
Yeah.
Right. Well, like I said, it's been great talking with you guys. We're
coming. Oh, yeah,
likewise.
Great.
Yeah. So, anything Let's else you want to add? Yeah. Yeah. We could do that for sure. Is there anything else?
No, I don't know.
I could talk for 3 hours about the big painting.
Yeah. Oh, and speaking of music and art, the big painting, Drama Magnifico, is on YouTube with the original music score. And it kind of dives through the narrative of the really complex and dramatic narrative of this painting. And so it's only a 5-minute video, but it's James' original musical score and a deeper look into the painting.
And do you want to give is it under James's YouTube channel or?
Yeah, it's under my channel.
So James Van Fossen, and then the painting is called Drama Magnifico.
Okay. And then there was one more that I didn't get shown of James's work. So we'll put that up there. So the ballerina.
Oh, yeah. That's magnum opus.
Yeah. That's the one that when we saw that, it gave me the encouragement to do the bigger one after it.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of people like, this one only took, I think, 4 months.
This one actually hangs in the corporate offices of Jerry's Artarama.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, I know them too. They've got two of my paintings. And it was really funny. Good. Yeah, it was an interesting experience. I was painting with Michael Harding, who I'm sure you guys know too.
Love his colors.
Yeah, love his paints too. So there was their first year at Jerry's Art of the Carolinas. And I happened to be down visiting my mother-in-law who was living down there at the time. And I said, well, I can come over and demo in your booth if you want. And he said, okay, cool. So I was demoing. And then David came up and said, okay, I want you to paint this, but I don't want you to paint it in these colors. I want you to go pick a palette out of Michael's paints. And he went off and grabbed canvas. Couldn't think what it was for a minute. And put it on my easel, and he says, I want you to paint it this big. And, you know, so he disappeared. And I walked over, and I said, David likes really like kind of like wild stuff, right? So Michael was like, yeah, don't hold back. So I grabbed these colors that Michael looked at me and said, oh my God, I don't know how you're going to make this work. And I like looked at him, I go, you don't know how I'm going to make this work? I don't know how I'm going to make this work. So I like squirted this stuff out and I started painting it. And the next thing I know, Michael came up behind me and he says, don't look now, but he's grabbing everyone that's down here instructing and talking about what you're doing. And I was like,
oh my gosh, how cool.
And I looked, I mean, my mouth dropped open. I looked at it, and this fear, Michael could see the fear in my eyes. And he goes, no, no, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. He started saying, and I was like, oh my God. You know, so I painted it was a water mill up in St. Andrews by the Sea or a pulp mill or something. It was some kind of mill and with trees all around it and all this. So it was. And it was something I probably have never painted like that again. But David walked up to me afterwards and he said, that's mine. And I said,
Oh, very good.
And I said, okay. You know, so he got it. And then he came back and told me later, he says, I'm going to hang this in my bathroom. And I was like, should I be insulted? Yeah. He said, he's going to hang it in the bathroom. And thankfully Michael and Karen were over at David's house. And he looked at me and she said, you would not believe this bathroom. She goes, it's the size of everybody else's room. Okay. So he was like, it's the size of a dining room and it's really a bathroom. And it's just, you know, and I'm like,
yeah, I'm in some bathrooms.
So I was like, okay, I guess I shouldn't be insulted. And he's like, no, no.
That's funny.
It's a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a huge compliment.
He's the best. He's like such a major supporter of.
Yeah. The whole time I painted Drama Magnifico, I was in conversation with him, and he was encouraging me so much to continue on with the painting.
Cool.
He's the one that started that. He gave me the show in Manhattan for the opening for that painting.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, they are really great supporters of art.
Yeah, I love them.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, great. So I think we're going to wrap it up. I really enjoyed talking with both of you. We'll need to do this again.
Yes.
Yeah, anytime.
Yeah. So Leanne, when you get the second book made, we'll do an art chat on writing. So.
You should Facebook me and push me.
Well, I will. Definitely. We'll definitely Nudge. Facebook. Yeah, we'll definitely Facebook you. So no worries. Yeah, so thanks again. Again, this is James and Leanne Van Fossen, and both of them are on Facebook. You have websites. Tell us your websites.
Mine is www.lavfineart.com.
Mine's like, yeah, World Wide Web. JamesVanFossen.com.
Well, that was real hard. Okay, and then this will be coming soon out on Buzzsprout. It'll be on iTunes. It'll be on Spotify. Great. It'll be on YouTube. It'll be on my Patreon page, which is patreon.com/LindaFissler. Linda Riesenberg Fissler. Sorry, don't even know my own name anymore. And yeah, thanks for joining us. Hope you guys had as much fun listening as we had talking, because we had a really good time.
Yeah. In this. And we're sorry if you didn't.
Yeah, breathe, James. It's over now.
So. It's my fault.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you, guys. Take care, everybody. Catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.